Obviously, the opposition troops in Libya have something to celebrate. 6 long months, hard-fought months that have turned out to end in some kind of victory, at least for them, with the fall of Gaddafi. But President Obama is also reminding Americans it was our efforts that helped the Libyan people break free from their dictator.
Despite 10 years of continuous war, it must be said, America's military is the best that it's ever been. We saw that most recently in the skill and precision of our brave forces who helped the Libyan people finally break free from the grip of Muammar Gaddafi.
And NATO is also taking their share of credit. Here's NATO spokesman Colonel Roland Lavoie.
Despite the presence of remnants of the regime, the Tripoli region is essentially freed.
It is true that the Libyan rebels needed the backing of NATO air power. And it's given Gaddafi loyalists 4 days to surrender or face further military action. One must only assume they're talking about not only action on the ground, but from the air as well. We want to talk about what the mission in Libya says about the power of NATO, if it says anything at all. Joining us now from Washington, Kurt Volker, former U.S. ambassador to NATO. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Celeste. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I mean, clearly NATO and President Obama are calling this a success. Do you see this as an example of the demonstration of NATO's capability and effectiveness?
Well, to be clear, the rebels could not have done this alone. So there is an element where there is a success that both NATO and the Qataris and the UAE helped the rebels by providing air power, by helping train them a bit and providing them some equipment. So there is an element to that. But then, you know, let's look under the hood for a second. You have an alliance of 28 countries. Really, it was the UK and France and the US that did the bulk of the work. The mission that NATO had agreed to take on was protecting civilians. And the only way to do that, really, is to remove Gaddafi from power. But that was not something NATO was prepared to do. So the Germans sat it out, Turkey sat it out, others did as well. And it was really a small coalition of countries that really did the work, including, as I mentioned, a couple from the Gulf states. So it's hard to say this was really NATO doing this. It was a few countries that did the work on their own.
So if I can understand what you're saying here, the using the word NATO as kind of an umbrella rubber stamp on this mission was a little bit misleading.
Well, it's true that NATO agreed the mission and NATO provided the command and control architecture, but it was not a collective NATO effort where everybody was pulling their share of the load. And that has been a problem with NATO for some time. I mean, that the U.S. has provided the bulk of the military assets and capabilities. And many European countries have underinvested in their defense capabilities for a very long time. And even those that they have, they're often unwilling to use in support of a military operation. So you really have a bifurcated alliance where there are a handful that are willing to do more and a majority willing to do less.
We're speaking with Kurt Volker, former U.S. ambassador to NATO. So, Kurt, let's break apart at least one part of what you just said, which is that they've relied on the United States for the vast majority of the military technology and power. And clearly, that wasn't supposed to be what happened in Libya here.
Right.
The United States just wanted to have a supporting role. And in the future, with these big budget cuts going in at the Pentagon, that may not even be possible.
Right. And you know, that has played out in the Libya conflict in a very vivid way. The United States initially led the military effort for the first week or so, did most of the bombing sorties, Tomahawk missiles that took out Gaddafi's air defenses and went after some of his deployed forces. And that was a vital contribution that the United States made. At that point, and I think somewhat to the surprise of a number of countries in NATO, the United States announced that we were now going to take a back seat. We were going to hand over to the Europeans so that they would do the work. Well, they didn't have the capabilities to really do that. Also, because of the NATO mission to protect civilians instead of overthrow Gaddafi, there was a hesitancy about supporting the rebels, providing them arms and equipment, and coordinating NATO's airstrikes with them. So as a result of that, this dragged on for months where no one really had the capabilities or the capacity on the ground through the rebels to make a strategic difference. And it was only when we really got into the days of the summer, say July, when you started to see the rebels making ground advances and a few NATO nations, particularly the UK and France, coordinating directly with them, making sure they had trainers on the ground, they had equipment that was being provided from some others, so that the NATO effort became sort of the air power that supported the rebel ground advances. That's what made a difference. We went through a period of, say, 4 or 5 months when it was kind of stagnant until people outside of the official NATO framework took those decisions to move further.
We're speaking with Kurt Volker, former U.S. ambassador to NATO and now international managing director for the BGR Group, which deals with government relations and investment firms. So, Kurt, let me ask you about this going forward. There's been a lot of talk about modernizing NATO forces, about all the countries that are part of the NATO organization playing a better role in the modern warfare of the future. And we've also, let's connect this with the descriptions of the warfare of the future, which people have said will be less about a traditional war on the ground troops and more about special ops, more about predator drones and secret operations. Do you think NATO is ready for that kind of modernization?
It ought to be. Right now, you know, you have to overlay on this the euro crisis, the debt crisis, the U.S. budget deficit, and the fact that Europe is not the center of all the strategic concerns that we have anymore. So all of these things put together means that Europe is really not in a position to invest a great deal in more capacity. And some of these other capacities are very ill-defined. I mean, how do you deal with some of these amorphous threats, extremist groups, cyber terrorism, cyber security, energy security? NATO needs to do this. These are the threats of the future, but I don't think we're fully prepared to do it. They've talked a lot about it, and in fact, NATO issued a document about a year ago giving a new strategy of how NATO's going to go about providing security in the future, where this was very prominent. But the reality is that no one is making the investments or putting those energies into NATO right now.
So what's the state of the alliance in NATO?
You know, we still need a NATO. Let's go back to basics. You have the United States and our European allies are pillars of freedom, democracy, market economy, rule of law, human rights. And frankly, that's the kind of world we want to live in. We want to live in a world where those values are respected and advancing, and they serve people well around the world. They're not just Western values. So that's what we'd like to see. We have, however, the West strapped for cash, and we have a lot of challenges. So we've really got to pull our socks up to make sure we're working together.
Kurt Volker, former U.S. ambassador to NATO, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.